Hi, this is Joshua Johnson, host of the Shifting Culture podcast, and I just want to say we have a giveaway on our Instagram page. So go to Instagram at Shifting Culture Podcast, and thanks to Brazos Press, we're giving away copies of The Understory by Lori Ferguson Wilbert, Empowered to Repair by Brenda Salter McNeil, and Fully Alive by Elizabeth Oldfield. The episodes are fantastic. I hope you listen to them all. But then enter to win before May 28th, because the winner will be announced May 28th. Go to the Instagram at Shifting Culture Podcast to enter.
The soul and the schedule don't follow the same rules. And listening to and communing with God is deeply inefficient. And so our productivity, our productive minds want to ask a question and get an answer. But what I would like to submit, and I think is really the way of Jesus, is that oftentimes we ask a question and we're met with another set of questions. And so our work then is to begin to discern not maybe the end game or the ultimate answer, although hopefully that will end up coming, but is to discern just one next right thing, an arrow in a particular direction. And that is often much more accessible to us, but it's a much slower process.
Hello, and welcome to the Shifting Culture podcast, in which we have conversations about the culture we create and the impact we can make. We long to see the body of Christ look like Jesus. I'm your host, Joshua Johnson. Go to shiftingculturepodcast.com to interact and donate, and don't forget to hit the follow button on your favorite podcast app to be notified when new episodes come out each week, and go leave a rating and review. It's easy. It only takes a second, and it helps us find new listeners to the show. Just go to the show page on the app that you're using right now and hit 5 stars. It really is that easy. Thank you so much. You know what else would help us out? Share this podcast with your friends, family, your network. Tell them how much you enjoy it and let them know they should be listening as well. If you are new here, welcome. If you want to dig deeper, find us on social media at Shifting Culture Podcast, where I post video clips and quotes and interact with you all. Previous guests on the show have included Todd Bolsinger, Jim Wilder, and Jesse Cruikshank. You can go back, listen to those episodes and more. But today's guest is Emily P. Freeman. Emily is the Wall Street Journal bestselling author of 6 books, including The Next Right Thing and How to Walk into a Room. As a spiritual director and workshop leader, her most important work is to help create soul space and offer spiritual companionship and discernment for anyone struggling with decision fatigue. Her podcast, The Next Right Thing, offers clarity and direction for anyone who wants to move beyond the pro-con list in decision-making. Emily holds a master's degree in spiritual formation and leadership from Friends University, where she also serves as a residency lecturer. She lives in North Carolina with her family. Emily and I have a great conversation around decision-making, discernment, and how to know when to stay and when to go. We walk through a 4-step discernment process, telling stories of how it works. The 4 steps are pointing and calling, remember your path, acknowledge presence, and yield to the arrows. Our decisions are often made in the moment, but our character is being formed along the way, so we focus on questions and who we are becoming rather than the answer. We talk about when we are ready to enter a new space, but it's not time yet, and when we know it's time, but we aren't ready. It's such a fantastic conversation. I know that you're going to love this one and get a ton out of it. So join us as we discern when to stay and when to go. Here is my conversation with Emily P. Freeman. Emily, welcome so much to the podcast. Really excited to have you on Shifting Culture. Thank you for joining me.
Oh, it's so my pleasure to be here with you today.
I would love to start with some of your decision-making. You know, you wrote this book, How to Walk into a Room, and it's not just about opening a door and saying, hey, I'm here, but it is a good discernment process and decision-making. I'll just start with something. I'll give you a direction of like, hey, we're going to go here. Why don't we start as an introduction to yourself? How about starting to decide and making a decision, discern whether you should become a spiritual director? And what was that decision like for you? And how has that transformed your life with Jesus?
What an excellent question. Because, and I say that because it has been a, in some ways, the most non-surprising surprise for me in my life to, you know, arrive here at this path where I'm, you know, serving as a spiritual director. I feel like in many ways, so much of my life has been pointing in that direction. But sometimes the most obvious things to us take us the longest to unpack. And so it started for me, if I could point to a time when it started for me, it was back in 2016 when I was thinking about, you know, I had been meeting with a spiritual director on my own. So I'm assuming we all are on the same page with spiritual direction, but I'll just say a sentence definition just for those who might be like, what's a spiritual director? And really, when we say that, we just mean this is someone who is willing to sit with and hold space for you, the directee, as you discern and listen for what God might be doing in your life. So it's really the director, it's kind of a funny name because really the spiritual director doesn't do any directing at all, but the spirit is the one. And so we co-listen together prayerfully to discern what might God be up to. And so that's really, I had been meeting with a spiritual director with that type of posture for several years by then. And in doing so, with it being transformative in my own life, I also realized like, oh, I have some of these sensibilities in myself. There's a charism in me that is drawn to wanting to do this on behalf of and with others. And I started looking for programs, as we do. That's what we do. Like, how can I learn? And so in that process, though, I ended up finding a spiritual formation program, which is not a spiritual direction training program. So I sort of went a little bit more broad. And that was its own decision-making process that I shared a little bit about in my last book, The Next Right Thing. Just about like, you know, sometimes our decisions are the hardest when they're between two good things. And, you know, it's clearer when we know, like, here's a good thing and a bad thing. Which will you choose? We don't really need a discernment format for that or a process. But for me, it was either keep doing the work you're doing or consider, you know, going back to school and thinking through what a spiritual formation discovery might be. So that's what I ended up doing. So it was broader, and it was just, I wanted to learn what does it look like to be transformed? How do we learn from and become who we are becoming in the process of decision making? And what's the role of formation in that? So that was sort of where I ended up, was in the spiritual formation space at Friends University out in Wichita. And I sort of thought that might be it. But over time, since I graduated the last several years, I realized that there is a part of me that still really wanted kind of that one-on-one, what does it look like to hold space for someone else? And here's the thing about this decision for me of kind of stepping into spiritual direction as someone who was providing it is, I don't think it would have been wrong if I hadn't. I don't think this was a situation where it was like, God has a will for your life and it's one thing and you must discover it, as if God is a cosmic trickster with two hands behind his back and makes you try to pick which one, and then if you get it wrong, oh, well, you missed your path. I just don't think that God works that way. But I have been delighted to discover new ways of relating with God and others through the practice of spiritual direction. And I imagine I will continue to discover that in the years to come.
So as you walk through the spiritual formation process and you started to become a spiritual director, and now you're holding space one-on-one with others and you're doing other things as you're writing, how has that impacted your own life and faith, even though that your focus is primarily with other people? How has it made you more introspective and relate better to Jesus?
There's a real gift in serving as a spiritual director for me. One is that for a whole hour, I'm not thinking about myself. And I'm able to really have a front row seat to what God is up to in and around the life of someone else. That does not mean that things don't come up. I mean, I think part of our training in spiritual direction is unlearning all the terrible ways we normally listen. And those come up in a spiritual direction session. But I think for me, in my own life with God, there is something almost, it's hard to put into words. It's an intangible, kind of a mysterious connection. And not like a, not not weird, not in a weird way, but a connection where there's just so few opportunities in life where we are able to, or where we make the space to give someone else that type of listening attention. And I know it's been said in many different ways, but listening, when you're listened to, it feels a lot like love. And when you're the one doing the listening, I think that it's a gift for me with God to be able to offer that to someone else imperfectly. I'll say that, imperfectly. But I think it also, the most transformative part sometimes for me in meeting one-on-one with someone is just after, either right when they leave or just after. A lot of the work I do is on Zoom. So when we turn off the Zoom call, and there's sort of this, like a thin place that still hovers in the room. And I just almost have to put my hand on my heart and in honor of how God is moving in the life of another, which is a reminder that God is always moving. Brennan Manning said, if God is speaking, then nothing else matters but listening. And so I think that this work is helping me to see the profound nature of that, even when, with a directee, what we talked about was so mundane, when it may have seemed as if literally, quote unquote, nothing was happening. But just the space that is made for spirit to move for me has become and is continuing to become a real gift for me to remember that spirit is always moving.
Mm. Yeah, that's really good. That spirit is always moving and it's on the move and is there and present. And they're present in our conversations as we listen one to another. As you've been listening to a lot of people and you've been in the work of helping people make better decisions and good decisions, what are some pressing questions that you have heard from people? Generally, what are people asking?
Well, you know, I started a podcast called The Next Right Thing in 2017. And so for that amount of time, and even before then, I'm involved in a lot of conversations about decision making, and one could also say discernment. I like the word. And I think people are always asking, what am I supposed to do? And I am often asking that too. That was really the catalyst for me wanting to have this extended 6 years long conversation in the first place, is not only helping people discern, you know, kind of what to do next, but also more importantly to me, and this is where the formation comes in, is who am I becoming as a result of having to determine what am I to do? Because really, it's not about the decision that we make, not really. It's about the person who I am becoming as I enter into this discernment process. Iris Murdoch talks about, who's an Irish author, philosopher, says that at crucial moments of choice, most of the business of decision-making has already passed. And I think that's true, that our decisions are made in the moment, but our character is formed as we go along our way. And our awareness of what it means to be ourselves, what it means to walk with God, what it means to walk in wisdom, that's something we cultivate on the daily. And so the questions that people ask, though, are those sort of step number 10 questions. What should I do? And they're not always asking, we're not always asking, like, who am I becoming? And so my work is to try to close that gap between people when we're asking, like, what's the right thing to do? Because we want to avoid regret. We want to avoid hurting someone. We want to avoid messing up. We want to avoid, in some cases, really profoundly wishing we had done something different. We want to avoid all of those things. But I'm trying to pull us back and say, well, who are you becoming today? And what's life draining and giving today? And what does it mean to move toward God? And what does it mean for you in your life right now when you're moving away from God? And if we can begin to name and be aware of all of those things on the daily, then when it comes time to make a decision on the spot, we may not make it perfectly, but I think we're going to make it with more confidence and awareness of God being with us in that process.
So what does that do for us as we're becoming something, and it's not just our actions? So it kind of reminds me of the difference between productivity and, you know, we're machines. As we're now, then we're humans interacting and relating one to another in relationship with each other and with God and ourselves. So what does that do for our decision-making process when it turns from productivity and production and machine towards becoming more human and more of how God wired us and made us to be?
Well, it can frustrate our decision-making process, to put it bluntly, because the soul and the schedule don't follow the same rules. And listening to and communing with God is deeply inefficient. And so our productivity, our productive minds want to ask a question and get an answer. But what I would like to submit, and I think is really the way of Jesus, is that oftentimes we ask a question and we're met with another set of questions. And so our work then is to begin to discern not maybe the end game or the ultimate answer, although hopefully that will end up coming, but is to discern just one next right thing, an arrow in a particular direction. And that is often much more accessible to us, but it's a much slower process.
Yeah. It's like, thanks, Jesus, for just asking me a question back to me. I mean, that's
not
what
helpful.
He did in the Gospels.
Unhelpful.
All the time, right?
Right. So frustrating.
It's like, hey, I want to know. I want right. to know this answer. And he
right.
just
right.
asked
I get it.
Me
I get it, what question. You're doing, but can you just like, I need to know, should I do this thing or that one?
Yeah, exactly. And it's been simple in my life. You know, looking back, there has been some moments in my life where I definitively know, I think this is what Jesus is saying. And he's saying, go this direction and move over here. And when I have done that, it works out great for me. It works out great for Jesus and the people around me. But then if you're in a space where it is more questions, what is how do we discern those arrows? Where are we pointing to? Where are we going next? What is it like when we're just sitting with questions? How do we discern the arrows?
Well, it's an excellent question that you ask. And I hesitate to say, and I'll answer it with another question, but I really want to. That would be great. That would really fall in line with our conversation. But you asked a minute ago, what questions are people asking? And I think that one of the things that gets us the most, that can cause maybe the biggest speed bump in our life, is in particular when it relates to the question of, should I stay in this space, job, relationship, faith, community, whatever the space is, or is it time for me to leave? And because we know that question holds within it so many consequences, and it can impact so many people. And depending on what the question is we're asking, whether it has to do with vocation or with our faith or with our community or with our home, that so much is going to be impacted. And there are a million other choices that are going to come with it, regardless whether which way we go. And so I think something that we often do is, some of us, in order to just make it through this question we have, we might leave too soon. We walk all the way out. We leave everything behind because we don't like that feeling of not having made the choice. And we just recognize kind of like, there's something in here I don't like. And so I'm a person who is like a right now, like just take action. I'm going to leave too soon. But then maybe there were things that I could have stayed for they hadn't realized. Other times we might leave on time, but we don't have a framework for processing that or for reflection. And so we don't really know how to walk in a healthy way into the next room that might be waiting for us. I would say some of the most painful exits are when we're forced to leave, even though we wanted to stay. And then we're left asking, well, what now? I'm in a hallway, not of my own choosing. And so where do I go now? And then there are some of us who stay put, and maybe we stay longer than is time because we didn't have a framework for making this decision. And then we wonder, how do I make peace with the change that's come in this space, when maybe I should have left a month, a year, 10 years ago, but here I am, and what am I to do now? So to me, and what I am leaning hard into, is sort of a four-part framework for thinking through, okay, should I stay or should I go? I dare you not to have that Clash song in your head. Good
yeah,
luck.
I was about ready to sing. So
no, I knew you were. But there is a framework to follow, and I think it begins with a question, which is, what is true right now? And I call this a practice of pointing and calling. I'm not the first to call it this. It's James Clear talked about this in his book, maybe you've heard of it, Atomic Habits. It's a best-selling book about how we build habits towards change. But in it, he talked about the Japanese railway workers who have this safety habit of pointing and calling out what is true. They don't just look at the speed. They actually say it out loud with their voices. When the train comes into the station, they actually state, you know, what was the mileage and what is the time? Everything is spoken. And it seems kind of silly, almost like toddlers pointing out obvious things like there's my ball and there's my doll and you know, it's time to watch Bluey. But how this can apply to us, what James Clear submits is that when we state these things plainly, it helps us know where we are in space and time. It helps us to do that next right thing and to build small habits. And I would say the same can be true for our inner life, that when we point and call it, what is actually happening in this room, so that I don't leave too soon or stay too long? What is true here now? And there are some questions we can ask ourselves in those spaces that can help us begin to discern, not should I stay or should I go? That's a step 10 question. We're just at right now, what are the yellow flags in this room? A lot of us want to say, well, this is a red flag, this is a red flag. And I would just submit, what if instead of going directly to everything's a red flag or everything's a green flag, what if we say anything that gives me pause is a yellow flag? And it's just an invitation to pause and to hold and to pay attention and to name specifically, to point and call, what's actually happening here that's causing me to ask the question, should I stay or go in the first place?
Yeah, that's really good. Yes. You know, on Sunday, we were looking at John the Baptist, and that's what he was doing with Jesus. He was pointing, calling, it's not really about me. Look, behold, here's the Lamb right here in front of me who is pointing and calling. And he was saying, we're going towards that place. And so a lot of the signs that we have in our own life and this decision-making, we often sit at the sign and we go, okay, I'm here because, you know, hey, I found the hospital sign. But really, you need to go into the hospital. You need to continue to move forward. What are some of the questions for us to start to discern as we start to point and call, say, what is true right now that we can say, this is the place that we're going towards and we're not just sitting at the signs and not moving past them?
Well, I think this process is sort of like, if we could use the metaphor of a room, that if all of life is like a house, then every room tells a story. And we know that some of the rooms are definitely for us. Other rooms, we know immediately we step in, this is not a room for me. But then there are some rooms that have been for us, but are not for us anymore. And we're trying to discern, what is this about? And so some of those questions you can ask before you make a final decision about staying longer or getting out or even making a change while you're there. One question could be, is anyone or anything missing from this room? And if so, who or what? That for me is a really helpful, just big picture question of knowing who feels comfortable here. Who has already left this room ahead of me? Who is walking into this room? What kind of impact does their presence have on the room? And what kind of impact have those who have already left? What kind of impact does their absence have on this room? Now, obviously, this may not apply for every single room of our life, but I think especially in communal spaces, these are some good questions to ask. Another question that we can ask is, to what extent can I be myself in this room? Do I have to change myself to such a degree that I don't even recognize myself in order to inhabit this room anymore? If the people who know me the best and who love me the most showed up in this room, what questions would they have for me? What questions would they have about this space? Would they see a version of me that they recognize? Or do I find myself constantly having to censor or edit or muffle my own thoughts or ideas? By the way, that can be a good question to ask in particular relationships or partnerships, because a lot of times we might find ourselves just shifting ever so slightly in a certain direction. But over time, you can end up in a really different place than where you ever intended in those personal or professional relationships. So I think that's another good question for those types of rooms.
I think those are a couple really good like getting to the heart of the things, questions that we don't think of very often, that we like, who needs to be in this room? Who has left? Who is absent? Those are really good things to help us discern. Well, is this room still a place that I need to inhabit, or is it time for me to leave? As you have in your life, is there a time when you have started to see, oh, this room, it doesn't fit anymore? I know that I need to leave, but you stayed too long. And what was that process like when you stayed too long in the room and you finally got to the place where, okay, I have to exit or else I'm going to implode? what was that process like? What was a time in your life where that happened to you?
I'm glad you asked the question, because I think it's an important one to point out, because there are various types of time that I think it's important to point to. And one is when you are really ready to leave, but it is not time. And there are other types of potential exits where you are not ready at all to do a thing, but you know the time has come. And those require really different energies. I think when you're ready, but it's not time, patience is developing within you. And when it's time, but you're not ready, is an opportunity to exercise courage. And so one specific time in my own life when this has been true is when I was co-leading an online membership community for writers, and I helped start it. And it was with a couple of business partners. One was my own dad, and we had a great relationship. We still do. So it's nothing like that. But it was just one of those things where over time, I started to realize this work I'm doing with these writers and in this space is very good work. But I don't know if it is long-term going to be my best work. And I felt called and pulled in a direction of being able to kind of focus on some new writing and some new things I wanted to do professionally and even just personally, that because I was a part of this business was just not going to be possible because of the capacity. And so I started to talk, you know, my business partners and I, we talked it through, and, you know, there were some things in motion to be like, okay, well, what does exiting look like for any of us who might want to exit in the future? And I was sitting on ready, as my mother-in-law from Mississippi says, but then something very small happened called the pandemic of the year 2020. And I was ready, but it was not time. There were things that we needed to shift. And I'm sure a lot of people can relate. There, maybe you were ready on a decision and you were kind of heading in a direction, and then something huge happens, whether it was the actual pandemic or something else in your life, a diagnosis, a family, something happens, and you're ready, but it's not time. And so I don't know that that's an example where I quote unquote stayed too long, because I don't know that there was another course of action I could have taken. But bodily, in my body, I felt that feeling of being ready for a change, but not being able to make that change. And so that was a period of 3 years where I do feel like I was challenged to cultivate patience, to learn what I could learn, to receive the gifts of the room that I had, to make the best of a time that was difficult on everyone, not just in the business, but just globally, everyone. And to really accept the difference between kind of what I would say would be good timing and what ultimately in partnership with God was the good timing. So I think that's one example where some of it may have been, I mean, I could have just walked away, but I don't think that leaving would have been good for anyone. But I think that's a good example of knowing this is a direction, and eventually you know that this is probably not going to be your job forever, but needing to put some things in place and to wait some things out that are just beyond your control.
It's hard to be in that space sometimes as you're waiting for it to be the right time, that you have been ready for a long time to jump and to get out of the space, and it's not the right timing. But sometimes, you know, we second guess ourselves constantly. Is this really the right time? Oh, no, it's not. I can't do it right now. It's not the right time. And we even continue to stay. And maybe for a decade, we're saying, no, it's not the right time. Something comes up. How do you have the courage when you know it's time, even though circumstances are telling you it may not be the time? How do you have the courage to say, jump?
It's an excellent question. And I think it depends on the person and on the situation. And sometimes I don't have the courage. And I think that's part of the thing, is that I think my mental picture is that we're on a road and we think there's like one exit ramp, but really there's an exit ramp every mile. And so knowing that this is not a situation where God is going to abandon us at the last exit, where we have to think like it's now or never. I think there are very few, there are some, but there are very few moments in life where it's now or never. So knowing that God is not going to let me miss my own life, and that God is going to be with me no matter what, even if I fail drastically in the eyes of the world or myself, that there is always a question that I can ask myself, which is, okay, but what does this make possible now? It's one that, you know, we hear business people ask a lot, but I think it's helpful here too. But I would also say that in addition to pointing and calling, some other steps along that path are pointing and calling would be step one. Step two would be to remember the path you've already walked. So rather than trying to peer ahead into the future of like, when is the right exact time to leave? Or, you know, thinking about there is a path in front of me that I have to discern. I would say the first thing to do is look at the path behind me that I've already walked. Because that's really the, in life, we're almost always only standing at the start. There is no path laid out before us except the one we walk with Jesus. And it's not necessarily predetermined in the way that we think. I think there is such a collaboration with God that it's almost like we're entering into a dance together, and that there is a back and a forthness that we can experience in communal life with the Trinity, that we can move forward together and create a thing that wasn't there before, not us having to try to find something that we missed. And so this practice of reflection for me has been helpful to determine timing. Because I don't know what's ahead, but I do know what's already happened. And I can look back and see when are times, other times when I have stayed too long, and what were the signs along the way, and what was at stake for me to leave sooner, and what was the result of me staying longer than I had hoped. Beth Moore did an interview with Russell Moore talking about leaving the Southern Baptist Convention, and she talked about how it's a lot easier to leave when we're angry than when we're sad. And she talked about how if we wait until we're angry, we may have waited too long. And I think that's an important barometer, or can be one barometer, to consider when are times in my life in the past when I have been so enraged and I have left the room and slammed the door behind me. That's one way to leave. Is it the most generative? Is it the one that I treasure the most? Probably not. But man, it is easier to leave when you're angry than when you're sad.
If we don't want to leave when we're angry, what does it mean to leave well, to exit a room? You know, we're talking about entering a room, but what does it mean to leave the other room behind well before we enter into the next room?
Well, I think a lot of it comes down to knowing that endings will always come and go, but closure is a luxury. So knowing that not all endings will have closure, and letting that alone bring us a little bit of peace. I think sometimes we think to end well means A, B, C, D, E. It means I have explained myself and my reasons to everyone in the room. It means that I have finished every single thing that I possibly could have done while I was there. It means that everyone understands why I'm leaving and the timing. It means that there are no questions and all is certain. And that's what we think leaving well is. But I would like to submit that sometimes leaving well is leaving alive. It's leaving in with a great amount of trust that I may or may not be doing this at the exact right time, but I'm going to trust that God is with me and that God is with you who might still be in the room behind me. I'm going to trust that in the same way that I may have been brought to this room, or I may have even prayed for this room in the past, and this was my next right thing at one time, that I'm going to trust that just because it might not be a room for me anymore does not mean that it wasn't a right room for me then. And that can help me with a lot of regret or questions or questioning, saying like, oh, I wanted this so badly and now I've changed my mind. Is that okay? And I would say, yes, leaving well is understanding that there is a healthy human rhythm to leaving rooms and finding new ones. And that doesn't mean that something is wrong with you. It might be that something is magnificently right. And so leaving well can also mean knowing and naming the gifts that I'm both leaving behind and that I'm taking with me. And it can also mean refusing to romanticize your next room or villainize your last room.
Yeah, that's good. I think when we're exiting a room, one of the things, I think the fear of, I would say, the fear of me, like my fear, I won't talk about other people, but my fear is that all of my people that I've had that were with me in this will abandon me. I have a fear of abandonment, right? And you have been over and over again talking about in this conversation about withness. God is with you. Other people are with you. People can hear you and listen to you. What is that process like of leaving a room with that fear of abandonment, knowing that most likely these friends may be gone as well, and that we might have to find new people on our journey?
You have beautifully described the third movement of this discernment process, which is acknowledging presence. Because the reality of it is that I hesitate to say out loud because it's kind of sad, is that some people will abandon you, and that there will be some relationships that will be lost to time. And that will need to be grieved, and that will need to be named. And I think that we do ourselves no favors when we think that trusting God with our next right thing, especially when it comes to leaving a space, means that God will then allow every relationship to remain the same and will allow me to still feel like I'm part of this group and will allow me to maintain all of my things that I earned in order to be in that space to begin with. The reality is there might be a lot of loss that we have to contend with. But I would say a greater reality that as we leave rooms and find new ones where we can flourish and grow is that we are becoming someone, and hopefully we are becoming more fully ourselves. And part of that process is two things, is paying attention to and living in line with, one, our own core values, and two, our own spiritual personality or our way that we connect with God. And sometimes when our core values and our own connection, way to connect with God, when those are aligned in the spaces where we find ourselves to the degree that we have the control to align those, because obviously sometimes we can't make the decision to leave and we must stay in a place that there's misaligned. But when we can align, I think that can often, there's a presence that is available to us in that, even with the abandonment feeling, even with the loneliness. And the presence is our very selves with God. And coming home to our own self in God can offer a great amount of comfort in the midst of some real loss of potential loss of relationship.
Well, let's grieve. That's fun.
I know, but it's grief, the worst.
It's the worst, but it is really important. And we often forget to do it, or some people forget to do it, and they pass up that opportunity. You know, there's a forced leaving. You know, my mother-in-law, who lived with us for 6 years, just passed away a week and a half ago, so 10 days ago. And so we're in the midst of grieving. A memorial is like 3.5 weeks away. So it's like this extended period of like limbo. And so it is like, hey, we have left the room that we know. Like, we don't have the same house. Like, when we moved, we were in the Middle East. We were working with Syrian refugees. We moved back to the States, and my mother-in-law moved in with us as soon as we moved in. So for the last 7 years, like, this is what we have known. And my son has only known his grandmother in the home. And so now we have to walk into a new room and we have to grieve the loss of a loved one that lived with us. But also now our literal home feels quite different. So if I'm not physically moving and going somewhere else to have a start to enter into something new, are there any good steps that we can take to say, okay, even we're in the same space, like the physical space, how do we make that and enter in well into something brand new?
Well, you mentioned this communal goodbye, and one of our rituals of when someone dies is we have in our culture, and all cultures have their own grief rituals, but one of ours here is we'll have a memorial service or a celebration of life or a funeral, whatever you might want to call it. And those types of goodbyes are real, can be a real gift, because it's everyone facing in the same direction and saying, this person was here and now they are no longer. And now we are all agreeing together and facing in the same direction to offer gratitude for their life. But also we're marking the ending communally and saying what was is no longer, and what will be we don't yet know. And that right there is a first step toward that. That is a way that we have culturally decided to point and call. It's a pointing and calling grief ritual that we all engage in. But I think when you go back home, like you said, and your home is the very same, and you're not leaving the room physically, but you are leaving the room in your own experience of that room, I think this process, I think it's important, at least it has been for me, to find personal ways of marking this ending differently. And that can be something as small as lighting a candle in the name of someone else. It can be a small daily examine practice where we look back over the day and remember, where was God with me today? And how did God show up with me in my life? And where did this person's memory also remain? Are there any new rituals or rhythms we can engage as a family that we can be thankful for what was and name it and not avoid it and not avoid the pain and the grief that will come along with letting it go? But also we can intentionally introduce new rhythms and engage them together communally, facing in the same direction, in smaller ways, carrying on. I'm a big fan of when there is no communal ending to mark, that we find ways to mark those endings on our own. And so I think a funeral or a celebration of life is one way we do that. And it's a very good way, an important way. But then there are those daily things that might come up too, that we might need to have celebrations of life ongoing on behalf of someone else as we continue to grieve their absence in our physical space.
Thank you. I think that is helpful to walk in that direction with others. And I know that there's a lot of people who have said, we're going to face this same direction with you. And that's important that we acknowledge, you know, the presence of others, the lack of presence of my mother-in-law and who we have in this room with us is good. And that you have, you know, one last step here in your process you have is yield to the arrows. We've talked a little bit about arrows. Is there anything else that you'd like to say as we move into this last process of yielding to the arrows?
Well, I think that the arrows is a contrast to an answer, and that it's, you know, this idea of I'm mixing my metaphors, forgive me, but if we think about the road metaphor, that if I'm in my home in North Carolina, where I live, and I'm headed to Florida, I don't get in my car outside of my own town and see a sign that says, this way to Florida. I see a sign to Charlotte, and I follow the arrow to Charlotte. And then when I get to Charlotte, I'm going to follow the arrow to Columbia, and I'm going to keep going south. I know ultimately the direction I'm headed is Florida. I might not know exactly, though, from here. It's not going to tell me that's where I'm headed all the way back here. And so I think in life, the same can be true as we yield to the arrows in our life. I might not know where I'm going to end up vocationally. I might not know if I should choose this space or that one, but I can pay attention to what is just one next right thing. What is one arrow I can follow? And I would say usually an arrow to me is just one thing. It's not 16 things, which is, you know, very inefficient, as I said before. But I think this idea of arrows, you know, I introduced that idea back in my book, The Next Right Thing, in 2019. And that's one of the things that has given people the most trouble. They're like, but what do you mean an arrow? And how do I find an arrow? And how do I see? Do you mean a sign? Do you mean a voice? Do you mean, you know, and I want to say like, oh, love, it's all going to be okay. I think arrows can come in all kinds of ways. But one of the most obvious ways that we've already talked about is looking back before moving forward. It's remarkable how looking back can actually help me do my next right thing, because I don't know the future, but I do know the past. And so paying attention to arrows I followed before and knowing where they've led can really help me think about my next arrow, always with the understanding and comfort to know, as Psalm 23 promises, that the Lord is my shepherd. I have everything I need, and that he will lead me, no matter if it's through valleys of shadow of death, that he will lead me and he will be with me. And that's a promise that we can hold on to. And I think it's an important one to think about with that final movement of yielding to the arrows, which, by the way, these four movements do spell the word pray, which I think is an important, the most important rootedness to remember in any decision-making process is paying attention to how God is with me now and now and now. And that's a form of prayer.
It's beautiful. It's beautiful. If you had a hope for your readers with this book, what is one hope that you have for them?
Well, I think one thing is maybe a reminder, maybe something that nobody ever says to you, and that is that maybe you need someone to tell you that no matter how much you wanted something, prayed for something, or worked hard to get it, that if a room no longer seems to fit, it's good to begin to explore why. And so that's sort of the beginning of the process. And I guess I would say my hope is that in that exploration, I guess my hope would be that we would not be so afraid to make a move or even to stay put, but that our narratives would not get in the way, our narratives of what it means to be a stayer or what it means to be a leaver or what it means to quit something. Like, these are strong, deeply held cultural narratives, depending on our social location and our season of life and our family of origin. Those are strong narratives that can keep us from really yielding to arrows in our life with God, when we might be sensing an invitation, but all those strong narratives might be holding us back. And so that would be my hope, is that regardless of if you stay in a room or leave a room, that you would not be afraid to ask your questions.
Yeah, let's ask those questions, not given to fear. You know, over and over again in Scripture, it says, do not be afraid. And why? It's because God is with us. In this process of yielding to the arrows, to going to find out what is the next right thing? God is with us, and we are not abandoned, and we're not alone. And so we have better stories to tell. We have better stories to tell ourselves, that we can have better questions to ask. And so thank you for walking us through that. Emily, I have a couple of questions for you at the end. One is, if you could go back to your 21-year-old self, what advice would you give?
Well, I think I would tell myself, I mean, I want to tell myself everything's going to be okay. But in some ways, that's not true. Like, sometimes things are okay. But maybe I would say that even when things aren't okay, ultimately, you are going to be okay.
Yeah, that's really good. And I think that actually dovetails great into what you talk about in your book, that it is about becoming, more about getting the answers. Who are you becoming? You are going to be okay. And maybe the answer isn't going to be okay, or maybe the thing isn't going to be okay, but you are becoming, and you are going to be okay. That's beautiful. That's good. Anything you've been reading or watching lately you could recommend?
Oh, what a great question. I have been reading a book called Braiding Sweetgrass by Robin Wall Kimmerer. And she's a botanist, scientist, but she's also a poet. And so she writes on indigenous wisdom and about plant life and about, you know, the council of the pecan trees. I mean, it is beautiful writing. And I, you know, I just am learning so much about different ways of knowing and how much we have to learn from different traditions, from different peoples, from the land around us. So that has been, it's been a beautiful read. I started it years ago, or maybe a year ago, and I was like, I need more margin in my life for this, because I knew it was just so rich and good. And so I've picked it up now, and it has been really generative and life-giving for me.
That's a good winter read when you have to hunker down inside and have some space. That's great and beautiful. There was a question I don't usually ask, but you talked about a thin place after your calls with your spiritual directees. What is a thin place for you other than right after that call? What's that space where you feel the presence of God? You know that he's there. It's a thin place for you.
I don't want this to be my answer, but I often experience that type of thin place in a time of great struggle. Maybe most particularly, you know, I have two 20-year-olds, twins who are 20, and I have a 17-year-old. And we are just now newly emerging from sort of the teenage years. We still have one in it. But I would say that now and in the past, probably the times when I have most experienced God in that thin place is in parenting questions. In questions of knowing, do I lean all the way in or do I lean all the way out? Because listen, shame never takes a break. And nowhere do I recognize it more than in my parenting decisions. And so I think though that's the worst, and I don't want any of that. I don't like any of those words I just said. However, I have found the promise to be true that God is with me in the midst of those, what sometimes feels like walking through the valley of the shadow of death and the great unknowing of, am I doing this right? And when is the grown-up going to show up and parent these kids in the proper way? And here I am, you know, they're 20 years old, like Emily. It's over. It's not, I understand. But it feels that way sometimes, like, wow, if only I could go back. But I do feel like I have experienced God in really sweet ways in those times where I am at the, like, not only am I at the end of the rope, I can't even see the rope. I mean, it's just like, there was a rope here one time, and it's long gone by now.
Yeah, that's really good. And that's not easy. But isn't it great that God is there with you, that he's walking
with
you?
Isn't it
great? I mean, yeah. It's just incredible that he is walking with you in that valley. There was really nothing, as we were sitting with refugees that came out of a war and were in trauma, there was really nothing that gave them more hope than Psalm 23 and God walking with them in the midst of that. And that embodied presence of another human, that we could be the embodied presence of Jesus in their life as well, gave them much hope. But it's the walking with and the struggle and the pain and the sorrow and the deep, deep trauma of life that you feel his presence, you know he's there. Emily, how can people get your book? Where would you like to point people to? How can people connect with you?
Well, you can find me wherever at my name, emilypfreeman.com. Same Emily P. Freeman on Instagram. And at one of those two places, you can find, you know, How to Walk into a Room, really anywhere you like to get your books.
All right. Anything else?
I guess I would also say, you know, I have a podcast called The Next Right Thing. We have new episodes every Tuesday. And those are, you know, 10 to 15 minute just reminders of doing the next right thing in various parts of life. And then we also, final thing is, I have a newsletter, a Substack newsletter called The Soul Minimalist, where we take kind of whatever that topic that week on the podcast was, and we kind of move it to the written space where we can talk about it. Because that's the thing about podcasting, as I'm sure you know, is you're saying things, but you kind of want to have a conversation sometimes. So that's what the Substack and that enables us to be able to do, is to kind of move beyond the pro-con list of decision-making and really kind of get into the deeper level of, okay, but what is discernment and what does it look like in this particular situation? So we do that at The Soul Minimalist on Substack.
Well, Emily, I know for me, your podcast has been a fantastic space, but it's a space for me that gives me peace. It's just the way that you produce your podcast and the way that you speak
gives me a lot of peace in my life. And so as I just sit and listen, I could take deep breaths and to figure out that, hey, I could just really do the next right thing and take those steps. But it gives me great peace and joy listening to your podcast. So thank you for that. And, you know, your book, How to Walk Into a Room, is absolutely fantastic. This discernment process of, you know, the process that you talk to, the pray process, is really important in asking good questions, to figuring out how to walk into a room and a space well. Is it time or is it not time yet? But I feel ready. But, you know, the difference between peace and avoidance, there's so many things. And so thank you for this conversation as you walked us through that process, your story with that process, and you helping us discern how to walk into a room. It was a fantastic conversation. I love talking to you. So thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode. If you want to see more episodes like this, go to patreon.com/shiftingculture and become a monthly patron of the show. You can help us produce more episodes so that we could see the body of Christ look more like Jesus. If you become a patron on patreon.com/shiftingculture, you will get early access to episodes. You will get episode guides. You will get bonus shows, hopefully, and more. So go to patreon.com/shiftingculture and become a monthly patron. Also, leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. It really helps us out and helps us find new listeners to the show. And just go and share this podcast with your friends, your family, your network, people that you think would enjoy it as well. Thank you again for listening to the show. I hope you have a great week.